Welcome to the Modern Slavery Pack podcast. My name is Jakub Sobik, and today we're presenting you with a recording of our second lunchtime seminar, which took place on the 6th of December. We had Dr. Maria Jovanovic from the University of Essex talking about the identification and support of people with lived experience of modern slavery in prisons in the UK. This was following the report that she and her team published earlier this month, which you can find on our website. The team included the International Organization for Migration UK and the Hibiscus Initiatives. The recording is only of Maria's presentation from the seminar. We don't record questions to leave space for open discussion during the event. So if you want to catch the questions next time, please come to the next one. Everyone is welcome. We haven't quite announced the next seminar yet, but we will do it soon. So keep an eye on our website, sign up to our newsletter, and follow us on social media. For now, over to Dr. Maria Jovanovic.
Thank you so much to PEC for inviting me to present this research. And thank you to everyone who has decided to join us today and hear about our recent findings. We have just completed the report, which is the output of this study, and it is available online. So perhaps some of you may have already seen it or read parts of it. So I will try to not go into much detail, but happy to elaborate. And I actually see that my co-investigator is also here today, so he might want to also join in and address certain questions. I just want to briefly say, I mean, there is no need to repeat. This is a project that was funded by Modern Slavery PAC in supported by the Arts and Humanities Research Council. And the focus of our research is the treatment of modern slavery survivors in the UK prisons, as well as legal and policy framework currently in place to identify and support them. And the research was conducted in a period between July 2022 and August 23. And in this period, there has been a momentous change in legal and policy frameworks. So we have captured some of it, but we acknowledge in our report that a lot of this is just still moving, and there is a need for further research and investigation. I wanted to start by presenting a testimony of one of our study participants who is a person with an experience of both modern slavery and imprisonment, and I will read it out for you. I was scared when he was arrested because he knew that I had my sister and my niece here, and he was also from the same village. He knew my family back home as well. And also they gave me a solicitor who never went through my case. She just said, "You have to be quick because I have to see another client." And my only fear was not to go back. And she said to claim guilty because my ex-boyfriend that had done that to me, he said he didn't do it. And I said, "He didn't do it. I said I did it myself." But I had hoped that the police, because, you know, my back was full of scars, you know, I couldn't have done that to myself. So they closed the case, they didn't investigate any further, and they charged me with perverting the course of justice, and I ended up in prison. This is just one of the stories we have heard, and it really depicts a terrible situation in which many of survivors of modern slavery find themselves being doubly victimized. Some of you who are not familiar with this area of research may wonder how come and why survivors of modern slavery end up in prisons. How can that possibly be? They are victims of crime. The traffickers and exploiters should be in prison. There are many different reasons why they end up in prison. In some cases, they are forced to commit offenses as part of their exploitation. This is a phenomenon called criminal exploitation, where people are trafficked with a sole purpose of being exploited to commit criminal activities such as drug trafficking, cannabis cultivation, very widespread here, shoplifting, and many other offenses. But there are also offenses where there is no, they may be convicted and sent to prison for offenses that either there is no nexus between their experience of being subject to modern slavery and their offending, or such nexus hasn't been sufficiently established. And what we wanted to underline and started our research with analysis of international law is that the requirement to identify and protect every victim of modern slavery, and we use the term victim and survivor interchangeably simply because a lot of legal documents that we analyze use the term victim, and we acknowledge the problems with using that term. So all these international law and obligations apply to prisons, because prisons are public authorities and they're bound by human rights law. And in fact, the statutory guidance for the implementation of the Modern Slavery Act 2015 expressly notes that prisons have responsibility to identify and support survivors of modern slavery and to raise awareness amongst prison and staff of this issue. But what we, and that is the reason why we started this research, what we have found is that there is simply limited knowledge of how many people we are talking about, if this is a fringe phenomenon or it's a large scale problem for prisons. So that has set us off to do this research. I need to also mention that during our research, HMPPS has issued modern slavery guidance for prisons in 2022. That guidance was only made public in early 2023. So it was sometime after our research has begun. And also, as many of you may be aware, there have been many changes in domestic legal landscape, with Nationality and Borders Act being introduced in 2022, and then Illegal Migration Act. And there is an overall climate, there is quite a big consensus on this, of declining protection for victims of modern slavery, especially those who are not British. And it's important also to emphasize that there is no, despite this express and obligation of prisons to fulfill and respect human rights, including the protection against modern slavery, there hasn't been any international guidance on this issue. And there hasn't been any comparative practice either. So this is a broad context in which we have conducted this research. As I already said, there are currently no data, there are no official records of how many survivors of modern slavery may be in UK prisons. But there is also no data about the number of victims who have benefited from the non-punishment principle. And that is a principle that asks states not to punish, which doesn't mean just punish, but also not to prosecute, not to detain individuals who have been compelled to commit criminal offences. So this is a very closely linked issue to our research, but we haven't researched it. And so, but the non-application of the non-punishment principle simply is likely to result in many people ending up in prisons. There is also an indication about their prevalence of modern slavery survivors in prisons by looking at criminal exploitation data, people who are referred to the national referral mechanism, where criminal exploitation was listed as one type of exploitation. And it's the second most common related type of exploitation. And there have been many cases challenging the application of the non-punishment principle, as well as some mentioning, but very cursory, in prison inspectorate reports without any details. We have, however, our findings through empirical research with single points of contact that have been introduced by the modern slavery guidance for prisons that I've just mentioned, suggest that this is indeed quite a significant problem and largely unaddressed until at least very recently. I wouldn't talk about much about methodology. If somebody wants to know more about how we conducted our research, we can answer these questions. I will allow us some time for you to maybe just read another testimony, because I think these are very powerful. So what this quote really suggests is that when survivors of modern slavery are caught in this extremely complex web of criminal justice system, they simply, at every step of the way, they seem to be unsupported. And so a lot of them end up in prison, and prisons represent this last port of call. But because their interactions with everyone else before that step has been confusing and problematic, you may begin to understand why it will be completely impossible for them to open up, to speak, to share their experience. And so often they remain unidentified and unsupported in prisons. And this creates a problem because unidentified and unsupported victims, not only does that violate obligations to protect, to facilitate their recovery, but it may also push them into further exploitation. And that exploitation, as we heard, can happen both within prisons, but it can, and it also happens right immediately after their release. They simply often end up released directly into the hands of their traffickers. So it's a big problem. And we call it a blind spot of the UK's anti-slavery regime because simply nobody has addressed it. So I'll briefly go over certain key findings. We grouped these challenges into three broad areas of practice. One is identification and referrals that happen to the National Referral Mechanism, which is a formal mechanism for identifying and supporting survivors of modern slavery in the UK. So how these identifications and referrals actually work from prisons? Then we looked at the kind of support that they are provided in prisons and also what happens in the process of their release. So these are three key areas of practice. And I'm not going to go into very much detail here. We have found that there is a lack of systematic approach to information sharing among authorities and within prison departments. There is generally a lack of awareness about the issue of modern slavery. This is a novel subject for prisons. They haven't been dealing with that so far. And so many of them know nothing about it, let alone how to recognize the signs. But most significantly, prisons cannot do much on their own to identify them because they're not first responder organizations. There is a list of first responder organizations who can refer individuals to the NRM, and prisons are not one of them. So even if they would be capable of spotting the signs, they need to contact other organizations to facilitate their referral. And that can take long period of time and delay any protection. There are many support challenges with providing support and assistance once they are identified, because some of them do get identified. And in general, prisons are not an environment conducive of people's recovery. We were told by many participants that they actually replicate this dynamic of free unfreedom, where people are not able to make choices for themselves and make decisions in their own life. And so this is the similar environment. And there is also simply lack of capacity of prisons because of funding. They are not part of this big scheme that is available to external organizations to provide support. So they don't get any additional funding. So while they did introduce modern slavery guidance, they haven't been given any funds to properly discharge these obligations. And there are also, as I mentioned already, and I'm not going to go into that detail, problems with bail and release, which potentially leads to re-trafficking and re-exploitation. And lack of coordination among organizations that work to support individuals in the community and prisons. There was another quote I just wanted to mention because I know we are approaching the end and I have a lot to say about this topic. So I hope there will be some questions where I can elaborate more. We did notice and note examples of good practice. However, these were usually dependent on individual effort, on commitment, and so they're not systematic and widespread. So we tried to highlight them and to encourage them being shared across the prison service to actually improve responses. So these are just some examples, collaborations and stuff between NGOs, and we encouraged that. And finally, we offered 10 recommendations to be specific. But I don't know if there is much interest here, depending on the audience, what kind of background you have. So I'm happy to elaborate these recommendations further. They are usually directed at either the government itself or the prison services in the in all three devolved jurisdictions. And we have also highlighted some issues that are important for further research, because this research has pretty much established a baseline. And so we acknowledge that a lot more needs to be done. There are particular issues that haven't been explored sufficiently. And this is, again, a policy report. So we haven't really, we are still working on academic publications that may delve deeper in certain questions. And but we haven't looked at specifically youth offender institutions, and we haven't really disaggregated male and female establishments. We have looked at them as a whole. So thank you very much. I try to be brief, but I'm very happy to elaborate on any of these points further if there are any questions and interests. And thank you so much, Rose, for sharing.